Hello and welcome to Landscape Photography World, the podcast for everyone passionate about landscape photography. I'm Grant Swinburne and I'll be your host on this show, talking to landscape photographers about their motivations, likes and dislikes. This week I'm talking to Michael Sadowski, a Toronto-based travel photographer redefining the boundaries between photography and painting. In his book, Wander Around Every Corner, Sadowski explores the globe, offering fresh perspectives on familiar landscapes, from Poland to Indonesia, Germany and the USA. Influenced by his impressionist painter grandfather, Sadowski's cinematic edits of cityscapes and landscapes are a marriage of colour, composition and storytelling. With over 6 years as a full-time photographer with over 600,000 Instagram followers, Sadowski's magical vision of the world shines, whether amidst the solitude of national parks or the hustle and bustle of busy capitals. His images radiate a serene essence that transcends the screen or page. We discuss insightful tips for aspiring photographers battling imposter syndrome. His book, Wander Around Every Corner, featuring his diverse body of works across his career, along with lots more. I hope you enjoy the show. G'day, Michael. Welcome to Landscape Photography World. How are you going?
Good. How are you? Yeah. Thanks for having me.
Oh, absolute pleasure to have you. I've been a fan of your work for many years. I've seen quite a bit of it about the social media places, all the usual haunts. I'm interested in a little bit about your technique, but I want to talk more today about why you make the choices you do, how you decide to process in certain ways maybe we can talk about. But it's really more about that, why you do what you do. And I guess I'd like to start with, where did it all start? Where did photography become a passion? And where did it start to become art beyond just documentary sort of photography?
Thank you very much. I appreciate the kind words there. When did it start? I would say roughly between 9 and 10 years ago. I was working like a nothing job in my neighborhood. And this was around the time where I got, my first phone with a camera, but my first phone with a decent camera.
Sure.
Nothing compared to like a DSLR, but something I could take pictures, decent pictures with. I used to walk back and forth to and from work. And one day I saw something that I connected with. I remember it It was just like light hitting this random apartment building. And I took a photo of it and something about that. I saw something there and felt like shooting it. And then I started looking for more, and I just made a habit out of having my phone in my hand and just shooting anything I saw. And then that really piqued my interest in photography in general. And I started just looking up street photography, cityscape photography, landscape photography, and realizing wow, look what other people are doing. This is incredible. It's nothing like what I have here.
How do I do that? iPhone
or whatever.
That was how I got started.
I felt really inspired. And then I also fell in love with the walks around my city that I was taking and just observing everyday life and just snapping photos. And then I also got addicted to the process of not only shooting, but gathering the images that I captured and then bringing them home and then working on them in the evening. And it gave me a nice little hobby. And then eventually I wanted to step it up a bit. I'm like, this phone camera is not going to do it anymore. I bought my first it was a Nikon D5300, crop sensor, but it was great. It was a huge leap for me. And then I really started to get hooked on it. One thing led to another. I was learning everything about composition and training my eye for the moments I want to capture, and then also camera settings, shooting in manual and making sure I don't miss those moments. So juggling all the settings while being in the field, and then at the same time learning Lightroom and Photoshop and everything at the same time. And at first I didn't want to share anything. I was just making them, but I was too embarrassed because I started following a lot of photographers online, and I almost didn't want to throw my work out there. I was super beginner, but eventually I did, and people liked them. And And that's where it all started. Eventually, I caught the eyes of some brands and I started getting work, and photography actually started paying the bills. And then eventually I was able to quit the job I was working at and pursue photography full time. And
nice, then, nice.
And then now I'm here. So
that's the dream, isn't it?
Yeah, it was something I could have never predicted when I was younger, yeah. Or even 15 years ago. So.
So what is it that motivates you creatively? What is it that you look for in a scene, or what is it that makes you go, that's what I've got to shoot?
It's, it's a tough question. That's something that's like always evolving. The things I was looking for years ago are not what I'm looking for today, right?
Sure.
But I don't know, some things just strike me like just the right placement of like accents and subjects that really fit together, almost like a perfect like puzzle. And when I recognize like those arrangements of objects, that's, oh, I think I gotta shoot this. And then on top of that, it's like the way the light is being balanced throughout that scene. And years ago, like, my eye was pretty simple. It was like, I recognized like the middle of the street might be like, it is usually like a safe, good shot. You get, you get perspective and a vanishing point. But then I started to see things like in different ways and different angles. And so it evolves. And now I'm like looking for things in a different way.
Yeah, cool. Do you find yourself planning more than you do shooting more responsively to the landscape or to the environment that you're in? Are you somebody that goes out and says, all right, this is the shot that I want? I've seen something like that on Google Maps or wherever. And do you spend a lot of time planning, or is it more just, as you said, when you started, are you continuing to wander around and just take the stuff that you see?
I'd say it's a mix. Like I have a list, like in my notes, on my phone, right? Like I have this long list of ideas, right? Like stories I want to try to tell. And I'm scouting locations for like all of those. And those are almost like pre-programmed, right? Like conceptualized kind of ideas.
Yeah.
And so those I'm planning for. But I never really know where or when that's going to happen or where and when I'm going to find the composition for them. But I always have my eye out for that. And then I go out and shoot all the time, just randomly in like neighborhoods I haven't been to. For example, like last week I was in Mexico City. I did zero research and I just wandered. But I kind of like it that way because everything's fresh and I'm not influenced by anyone else's compositions or stories. But it really depends. Some places like landscape destinations, you have to do a little research when it comes to trails.
You don't want to go walking somewhere that you might fall off a cliff in the dark.
So it really depends on like where and what I'm trying to do and timing, scheduling.
Sure. How important is it for you to have projects to work on? Do you have projects and do you classify your work in projects in any way?
I do. I think it's important. I think it gives you a little bit of structure. So there's always something on the back burner you can jump into on top of the spontaneous adventures. And obviously I'm always trying to get work and with tourism boards or somewhere in the travel industry. And those are often like projects in and of themselves. Clients usually have shot lists and I'd have to get them images of specific locations.
Have you found they usually ask for that when the weather's not going to be conducive to what they want?
I've had trouble with that before. Okay. If you're trying to sell your destination as somewhere like you should spend your very limited vacation on, right? Like you want to show it off as like bright, sunny, happy, vibrant. And then I'll go there for 4 days and it rains the whole time. And then I'm like, this is it. But there's ways around it. Nighttime, unless it's like raining, you can make night look like pretty nice even on a cloudy evening. And sometimes you just have to extend. But
I get what you mean. Yeah. When I look at some of your work, one of the things, or some of the most striking images anyway for me, the ones which have this sense of mystery or loneliness attached to them. Where does that come from?
That's a mix of things, I would say. I think we all have these core memories that are buried in our subconscious, right? When I was growing up, I was watching like Batman cartoons and Dick Tracy movies and cartoons and a lot of other like superhero kind of stuff. And the aesthetics, I realized just recently, actually, maybe a couple of years ago, that the aesthetics in those cartoons and movies is like the edits I'm trying to create now. Mm. And it's just the way the lighting is and almost the color palettes in some of them. And so I feel like a lot of the aesthetic comes from there, but I didn't even realize it. Like I was creating like from whatever I was feeling, it was just coming out in Photoshop. And then I questioned why, and then I did a little introspection and realized maybe that's what it is. Another thing is my grandfather, he was an oil painter, and a lot of his paintings were of city scenes at night, like a little lone figure and this dramatic lighting kind of popping out from behind corners. And when he was around, I wasn't into photography at all, but I had seen his paintings like my entire life.
Yeah.
So I guess like when he passed away, it's like that art influenced like what I thought art was in a way. And then I feel like it's also a way of like me expressing like some of the traumas I've been through as well. Oh. And it's almost like a way of healing in a way, just because there were times where I felt like really lonely and experienced loss in my life. But at that time, I just kept my head up high and tried to suck it up and just move on. But maybe that was a bad idea. So maybe now the work I'm creating is just an expression of the way I was feeling back then. So I think all those things coming together is what's behind a lot of the work I've been making.
Yeah, cool. Obviously, quite a lot of your stuff is fairly unusual. It's not your typical travel or your typical landscape or urban photography. You have a definite style. How did you work through the process of experimentation to land on those elements that you are using a lot? Obviously, you've got things that you want to do or want to achieve, and you've got to try different ways of getting there, and sometimes that ends up in failures, and experiments are always going to, the process of experimentation should result in failures so that you can actually learn. How did you use that to learn to get to where you are now?
That's exactly it. It's an evolution, right?
Yep.
I just constantly keep shooting and editing, and over time I might be working on something and then I'll have a real like breakthrough moment where I realize like, hey, what if I were to do this? Like what if I were to dodge in Photoshop, like with a curves layer and throw light from behind this building. And then that light like lands on like face of this building across the street. And it's like a moment, like a realization of, like, oh, I could do that. And that would probably look pretty cool, that I will then carry on to future edits. And then get stuck with something else later on and then have another breakthrough, and then all these things compound, and then and then like your style and the techniques that you're using just evolve over time.
Yeah, cool. You mentioned storytelling and that being an important part of how you are doing it. Where do those stories come from? Are they from your own past experiences, or are they things that you're picking up along the way?
It's a mix of things. It's like I was saying before, I think a lot of the work I'm making carries a lot of the elements of my past, right?
Yeah.
And feelings that I probably couldn't express with words or never did express with words. And this is my way of getting it out into the world. But often I do different types of photography, right? Like landscape photography, you might not get that like human story, like that you would get in a street photo, right? So it really depends on like where you are, what you're trying to say with your images.
Mm.
And sometimes it's just a lot easier than other times. Like street photography, sometimes things just randomly happen, and you'll just get like an interaction between two people for one instant. Yep. And if you capture it, like, you realize, wow, that's a really powerful message I just said. Yeah. But then there's other times where we're like, this is just a beautiful looking photo. You're on a mountaintop and there's nobody around and the light is just great. And that's it. You can find meaning in it after, or you might feel something spiritual or feel a story while you're there shooting it. But sometimes I feel like, wow, that's just amazing and I want to capture it.
So. Yeah, sure. One of the things you talk in talking about telling stories with landscape or not telling stories, as the case may be,
mm-hmm.
One of the things that I always find myself asking the question when I'm looking at both other people's work, but as well as my own, is how did that landscape end up looking like that? Whether it's a volcanic cone or a flat plain, a floodplain or mm-hmm. something like that. And they're the things I think are infinitely interesting in looking at some of those landscapes. And yeah, whether they're a pretty picture or not is going to be debatable at the end of the day. But for me, there are some things that go a little bit beyond just, oh, that's a nice scene, you know?
Yeah. When you put it that way, it's like we're like observers from the future.
Absolutely.
Like that whole process took like hundreds of millions of years. We're just there to witness the aftermath.
And
make art.
How important is it in recording history? Because that's one of the things I think photography in society can actually do, particularly with street and architectural photography. You see the changes. I love looking at pictures of New York, Sydney, London, wherever, from the past, and then trying to recognize, okay, that street and that's that building is still there, and yet all of this other stuff has changed.
Yeah.
How important is that sort of thing to you in recording what you're seeing as you're going through time in that process of taking photos?
Like, in a way, like, time is always moving, right? Like, it's just constant slog forward to the towards the future. And like, with the camera, it's almost like taking, like, freezing like one instance of that time, like almost like looking at time with a microscope and seeing it. And so it's all so it's interesting, right? There's a part of me that wants to capture things that feel nostalgic, that a little bit of a world that could be 80 years ago, 100 years ago, but also could be present and maybe also in the future. Something like we can all relate to, right? But then there's another part of me that when I'm thinking that way, I'm also avoiding like the present, like now, right?
Yeah, right.
And the photos of, let's say, if I went out in the street right now outside my house and I took a photo with all the modern cars and whatever buildings are there 80 years from now, people are going to look at that photo and be like, wow, I can't believe how things used to be. So this is a balance for me, at least. I'm trying to find a sense of nostalgia and timelessness, but also don't want to ignore the present, because in the future, people will get that same nostalgic feeling by looking at the photos that I shot today of modern elements. And I had that realization with cars. Like, I used to not like having any current cars in my photos in the streets.
Okay.
It would just always bother me. But when I saw like an old car, I'm like, oh my God, you see that? And like something from like the 1930s. And I had a realization, people are going to look at like our cars like I look at those 1930s cars.
Exactly. Someday. Yeah. In 100 years, those 1923 Fords and Dodges and whatever, they're all going to be classics.
But I wouldn't even say that. I wouldn't even go that far. I see photos from the 90s now and I feel.
I was walking past a car show down the South Coast recently, and I saw cars from not even my childhood, from my 20s,
right,
back there. And I'm going, wow, that's a classic car now. Okay.
Yeah. I turn on the like classic rock station in the car and they're playing like Nirvana. And I'm like, wow, I'm getting old.
Exactly. I want to talk a little bit about the business of photography. You said fairly early on, you'd made a decision to get into photography full time. How difficult was that choice to make? And is it something that you were drawn to, or is it something that you just decided one day and said, yep, this is for me?
I like to think that I got, I don't want to say maybe lucky is not the right word, but definitely lucky at first that a brand had reached out to me and offered me a campaign to work on for that. And then it's from there, things snowballed. It's almost like I got a few jobs really quickly, and then I was able to almost have them on my portfolio. And then I learned quite a bit about the business from the friends I had met early on in photography, and about pitching other brands for campaigns. And now that I had these projects in my pocket, I was able to use those in the pitches. And then a lot of people started saying yes. And it's like a snowball effect, right? My portfolio just grew and grew.
The more work you do, the more people see it, and the more people want that kind of work.
Yeah. So I'd like to think I was very fortunate to get those first few jobs, because that led to so much more.
Yeah.
But if that didn't happen, I don't know. I don't know where I'd be, but that's just not how it played out. So,
well, I normally save this question for later, but I'm going to ask it now. What would you be if you weren't a photographer?
I don't know. It's a good question. I used to be a DJ at one point, and then I quit that. I was actually working with a photographer before I became a photographer. I was working with another photographer as an assistant and a retoucher. So that's, I had a head start when it came to Photoshop and Lightroom, but I was just doing it because I was unemployed and I was friends with him, and it wasn't something I had planned on doing. But yeah, I really don't know how it would have played out. I feel like how life has chapters.
Yep.
It feels like there's literally one day and then the next, and it's two separate lifetimes.
Yeah.
I feel the day I started photography, or the day I took that first photo, was the beginning of a new chapter, and it's almost sometimes hard to remember before it.
So
I don't know what kind of where life would have taken me at.
Okay.
I didn't really have any serious interests at that moment, and so this is where it took me.
One of the things that you've learned, I'm going to reread that.
Okay.
What is one of the things that you've learned from running your business that you would pass on to somebody that was thinking of starting their own?
I guess never take yourself, suppress your ego, guess, a little bit, and never stop grinding. There's going to be a time where there's going to be peaks and valleys. You're going to be you might be really hot at one point and in demand, and everyone wants to work with you. And then you might get complacent and think, I'm great. I'm always going to have work.
Yeah. This work will
that's not going to be the case. And also never stop evolving, right? Your work and your style, because what you thought was great in 2017 might not be great in a year from now. I feel photography is getting, with all the tools available now and the ease of use, a lot of people are able to make very beautiful images easily. And maybe your uniqueness isn't so unique anymore. So just keep pushing and strive to make your work stand out constantly.
Yeah, I think that evolution lesson is probably one of the best ones that anyone in photography, whether it's landscape or portrait or whatever, changing things up and experimenting with new things is always, you're going to keep it fresh, but it's also going to help you expand your skill base. And to me, that's one of the best things that you can do as a photographer. And whether that's in field work or whether it's in the back office, if you can expand your skills, you're doing yourself a much better service than not trying new things.
Yeah. And also, I guess in a romantic kind of way, I'd like to think that if I can take one image in my lifetime that contributes to photography as a whole and helps evolve the entire genre, then I'll die a happy awesome. Man, right?
Have you taken that photo yet?
Well, that's for everyone else to decide. I don't know.
Sure. One of the things that we skirted around, but I'm really interested in people that particularly do work for clients and things like travel or interiors and hotel rooms and all that sort of thing. How do you maintain your creative vision and your artistic integrity when the client's saying, this is what I want? Are you able to suck that up and just go, okay, I'll give you what you want, even though it's not really where I'm thinking?
This kind of ties back to another thing you were speaking of earlier, where you have, do you have any projects going on? And I was saying that how sometimes I spontaneously go out and shoot and there's projects over here. I have almost like different bubbles of my work, right? There's my personal stuff that I share on social media. Whenever I make a new piece, I put it out there. But that's like evolving onto this very dark and mysterious side, right? Yep. But then there's, like we were saying, there's work. If I have to work for a tourism board and they want, and it's in the Caribbean, let's say.
Yeah, like, sunshine, palm trees, sand, yeah.
Yeah, so there's a style I have for that kind of work. And there's, my fingerprint is on it.
Sure.
There's going to be a give and take, right? Like you're working a job and they want a certain look. So I'm going to do the best I can to the best job I can to keep the client happy, but also do it in my way.
Yeah.
So there's a balance. And then I'll just turn around and I'll shoot like after hours, like on the same job.
Yeah.
And I'll get some personal photos for myself. And those are like in two separate categories.
So, nice. I think that's a really cool way of doing it.
I can't just force, this is what you're going to get. What's behind me?
Like, mind you, people are going to come to you because they've seen your look and that's potentially the style that they're looking for.
Yeah, that's a conversation though. Before the job starts, that's what you talk about. Like, I always ask that. What are you looking for?
Yeah.
Show me like a mood board or something.
Aside from what's your budget, what are you looking for is probably one of the most important questions you can ask. If you're not asking that, then you're not going to be very successful, I don't think.
Yes, exactly. I've had jobs where that wasn't discussed. And then I'm like, here you go. And they're like, oh, we don't really like this. We wanted something more like this. I'm like, I can do that now. I wish you would have expressed that to me sooner.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. It's always a conversation though. And I think that's the most important part is the communication that comes along with it. Yeah. How do you price your work? It's one of the things a lot of people struggle with, both whether it be prints or whether it be selling digital work. Digital is notoriously hard to price.
NFT, like NFT.
NFTs. I'm talking even if somebody wants digital rights. Yeah, they've come along and they said, I love this image and I want to use it in a magazine or I want to use it in a book. I've had that a couple of times and it's like, okay, how much do I go for you?
it's tricky. No real playbook aside from like who's the client, like where's it going to be used, how long will this be used for, is it like in perpetuity, which a lot of people will ask for, which that's something to be careful with. And are there sub licenses?
Like that's something that should cost a lot more as well. You
know? Yeah. So all of these things, they influence what kind of price I would give. And also, who is this client and what kind of job is this?
Yeah. Yeah.
So I don't know. It's really hard. Every single time it's me having to figure it out or asking some other friends for advice and really parting out based on the request for deliverable. So it's tough to just, I can't throw numbers out right now.
Yeah, no, I wasn't particularly asking for numbers, but whether or not you had a process where you actually thought, and you've described some of that in terms of asking those questions about how's it going to be used and where and for how long. And those are the things that I think are important to ask when somebody comes to you and says, hey, I want to use this image, or say, hey, I want to do a campaign and I want you to shoot this. It's always those important things, and who the client is always going to be a big deal, because if it's a small mum and pop business versus Microsoft, I know I'm going to charge Microsoft a hell of a lot more than mum and pop.
Yeah, and like things like the terms, right? If it's like they like exclusive rights versus non-exclusive.
Yep.
Or they like 1 year versus forever. So all these things push and pull the price back and forth. But there are times like you just can't be afraid to say no. Like sometimes I've turned down a lot of jobs just because I didn't think it would benefit my career moving forward. And no. I thought that I was selling myself short with the agreement. Like too much work and effort for very little pay. And in that time, I could spend it being more productive in other ways that will benefit my career. Yeah, so time is our most valuable asset. And that's what people are paying for.
Yeah, yeah. And to be honest, for many people, it's also the hardest thing to price. What is my time worth? And you've got to work out where you sit and what you want to value yourself at.
A good place to start is it's above minimum wage. If you're going to spend X amount of time shooting this campaign, you should be getting paid at least X, minimum wage. And then that's a good place to start when it comes to hourly rates. But
excellent advice.
But I feel like a lot of people do things for free now.
This is part of the problem. And this is one of the reasons why I like to include this part in the podcast is because there are a lot of people that are getting, I was talking to, I think it was Darren Spoonley a few weeks ago, and he was saying he gets offers from companies wanting to do a quid pro quo deal, where they'll give him a piece of equipment or whatever, and he has to do a review in his videos and all the rest of it. And he's said no to 98% of them because either the thing that they're trying to sell is rubbish or it's just not worth his time when he gets down to this is what it's actually going to take to do this.
Yeah.
And that bit of kit isn't worth it.
Yeah, exactly. I'm glad others feel the same way.
Yeah, totally. Do not undersell yourself. That's the main message, I think, that I want to get across.
Yeah, definitely.
I want to talk a little bit about location and where you've shot. You've spent a lot of time on location in various parts of the world. What's still on your bucket list that you haven't got to?
A lot. I've spent a lot of time in Europe. I keep going back. There's something that, I don't know, it's just that old medieval kind of style of architecture and streets and the way people dress, and that keeps bringing me back. I haven't gone to Japan yet. I don't know why. It's just every year I'm like, I'm going to go to Japan this year, and then all these other things happen and I don't go. So that's probably my bucket list place. But yeah, I'm working my way over. I'm working my way east.
Is there anywhere you've been that you'd like to retire to?
Anywhere I'd like to retire?
Yeah. If you had your choice, ignore all the rules around visas and all that kind of crap.
Probably Italy. I think that'd be a nice place. Yeah. No shortage of great food and beautiful scenery and friendly people and nice weather.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think that's it for me.
What's your most memorable experience?
I don't know. I'd say the first time I hiked through Switzerland, probably like high up, on some of the trails that are like up high in the mountains. Yeah. I'd never seen anything like that amazing and epic before. And the air is so fresh. And it was, that's the first thing that came to mind.
Yeah.
I enjoy everywhere in a very unique way, but I gave you the first response. But,
going to be the most memorable.
Yeah. It's the complete opposite from where I'm from.
Yeah.
And the places where I spend most of my time.
Yeah.
So that's why it stood out.
Cool. What about horror stories? Is there anything that, or any place you've been, or anything that you've done that's you've gone, that was a bit sketchy?
I've been pretty fortunate. I haven't seen anything too brutal. I've never been robbed for my gear or anything like that. That doesn't happen. Apparently, I almost died in a plane crash.
Oh, wow.
I was in Indonesia. I was flying from one island to the next, and I had really bad food poisoning from a couple days before. And I took all these drugs, and I was just keeled over pretty much, but I had to take this flight.
Yeah.
So as soon as I got on the plane, I just fell asleep in my seat, and I was knocked out. I woke up and everyone was just cheering and Oh my God, thank you so much. And apparently, like right after takeoff, the plane had dropped. Like it went up and then it was like super rocky. And then at one point, just after takeoff, it had nosedived. And then the whole flight was just all over the place.
Wow.
Up and down. Everyone was like, people were sick. And I don't remember any of it, thankfully. But it would have been the worst. It was the worst flight I've ever been on. And thankfully, I didn't experience. But I think that would be a horror story if I were conscious. So.
Fair enough. Do you prefer taking photos alone or with other people?
It's a mix. Again, it depends where I am. If it's hiking, I prefer to be with other people. If it's like landscape photography, I don't mind being with others. But street photography, like anything in the city, I want to be by myself. Because yeah. I will wait like hours. If I find like a composition, I'm like, this is perfect, or this is going to be perfect when these lights turn on, or when the sun is like all the way over there. And then I'll wait for the right person to, or the right human elements present themselves. Sure. And I feel like I don't want to bring anyone somewhere for 2 hours and then have them wait. So yeah. I feel like I'm holding everyone back. So I'd rather be alone for that. Yeah. Sometimes you just want to work a scene. And someone else wants to go. And I don't like that sense of anxiety that I get from that.
I'm with you.
Yeah. And then there's times where I'll wait for a couple hours. And I'm like, yeah, it's not good enough. And I'll go back the next day again. And you can't drag someone. Imagine like a non-photographer. Oh, we're going to go back to that street corner again for 2 hours.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. My wife knows that feeling.
I bet she loves it.
Yeah. Sometimes, yeah. Sometimes she just says, I'm going over here and doing something different.
We're a special breed. Like, slightly obsessive, but...
Definitely, definitely.
Yeah.
Do you often bump into people that you know out in the fields? And where does that happen most?
It happens randomly. I'm an introvert, so I don't... If I see other photographers, I'm not like... going right up to them and talking to them.
Go over and have a chat. Yeah.
it really depends. It really depends. It's happened all over the place. Just people that we know, like I may know online. More so in places where everyone has their tripods lined up and you're just standing around, Yosemite or something. But not when I'm in the city. I'm usually just a lone wolf doing my thing.
Cool. A lot of people face the problem of imposter syndrome. Has that ever been played a part in your career yet?
Yeah, all the time. Always. Almost every day. Like I said, like things, peaks and valleys.
Yep.
Like you'll be feeling really good about, you'll make this new piece, you'll put it out there, everyone loves it. Great day. Then the next day, you like don't really have anything good to share. And then you see someone else is working, like, holy crap, that's incredible. And then I'm looking at like my work. I'm like, man, what was I doing? I was so like confident about this. Yes, but you can't let it get to you. You're on your own mission. Like your skills, your vision, your body of work, your progression, like through time, like an evolution of your work. And you just have to keep focused on it and not even worry what other people are doing. It's almost better. Like it's great to support your friends and it's great to look at a lot of art, but it's also not. It's not so great at the same time.
Yeah, no, I know what you mean.
You don't want to be like influenced. If you have a plan, like stick to it and work towards it.
Yeah.
Don't worry what other people are doing. There's people who have started photography like decades before, before you might have. And you got to respect that they may be making better work than you, but you never know. Just stick to your guns.
This is the thing. Everyone, you said it yourself, everyone's on their own path. And at some point in that path, you'll be better than some, you'll be worse than others. And you've got to always accept that. There's always somebody that's going to be better than. And
But I don't even like to think of it that way either. I get caught saying that better. This photographer is better than me.
Yeah.
So that's where imposter syndrome comes from. It's art, right?
Yeah. Like,
it's subjective. No one's better than anyone else. It's the way the viewers react to any given piece at any given moment, and that based on how they feel at any given time, right? Yeah. You may make something and someone sees it right at the moment they needed to see it. And then that might become their favorite like artwork of all time because it's very personal to them then. So You could have done that on your first day of photography. It has nothing to do with being better than anyone. So that's, we're just creating these images and throwing them out in the universe, and hopefully they connect with people trying to view it. So
yeah, I think that's a great way of looking at it.
Yeah. And that's how you would avoid imposter syndrome.
How do you deal with the issue that some photographers face where they just get into a creative rut, or they're just not feeling that things are working, and you're looking at your stuff and it's all, yeah, it's not the imposter syndrome side of things. Mm. It's more, this just isn't working the way that I thought it was going to do. I know I can do it, but I'm going to have to come back to it later. What do you do in that time?
I do nothing. I don't force it. You can't force it. The more you try to force inspiration or ideas out, the worse they get.
Yeah.
I do things that are like the opposite of photography. Like here's an example. Like I get so many good ideas when I'm just washing dishes in the sink.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like this mindless task. And then all of a sudden I'm like, what if I did this and that? And then the whole like idea will stay. Or watch movies. Go for a walk without a camera. Go for a drive. Listen to music. Like things that are just like where you can't actually shoot or you can't actually edit.
Yeah.
And then the idea is if photography means a lot to you, it should be on your mind. Like anyways.
Yeah.
And so you'll see things that you'll connect back to photography with, and the ideas will come. But my advice, just don't force it. Like it'll come.
Awesome. What do you see as being the biggest challenge facing photographers right now, and where do you see the future of photography going?
There's a few things. Like we were saying before, as a working photographer, brands trying to take advantage of you, and then brands actually taking advantage of a lot of people.
Yep.
And just getting work for free. So that's becoming more and more of an issue. Why would they pay this person when they could ask 50 people to do it for free? They get the same amount of reach across those 50 people than they would paying this one person. Because everything is pretty much like on social media right now, right?
Yeah,
that's where the advertising is being done. So that's a concern. A lot of people worry about AI. I don't know how to feel about it.
Yeah.
I feel like that's a whole other conversation if you want to go down that route.
Yeah, sure. If we've got time.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting tool. I don't think it's not photography. But I feel like it's going to affect some photographers for sure, like stock photography or like product photography. If a brand needs images in a pinch and they have a small budget, they can create like realistic looking AI images in a second, and they won't have to hire a photographer. But if you're a wedding photographer, like I think you'll still get work because I don't know if people are going to be doing like AI photos of their own weddings, right?
Yeah, so, that would be weird, but I guess you could make yourself look like Brad Pitt and Angelina Jolie if you wanted to.
But then that's not your wedding, though.
That's right?
Like, so there's still, I think there will still be an interest in like real photos that preserve real moments in time. And I think they're in a world that, like, let's say years from now, there's trillions of AI images and no one can believe their eyes anymore. And they're just bombarded with the most beautiful things ever. But they're all AI. I think there might be a newfound appreciation for real photography.
Yeah.
Right? Like things that were actual moments captured.
Yeah.
So I feel like we're going through this phase where this is super cool and everyone's blown away with it.
That height curve where things become hot and then they plateau for a bit and then they drop off. And then it'll come back to a level where everyone is comfortable.
I think like portrait painters were upset when the camera was invented.
And film shooters got upset with digital when that first came out. It was the death of photography. And I think photography's died, I don't know how many times, but it's still here.
Right. But painting never died. I think maybe people like gained a new appreciation for it because of how difficult it was.
Yeah.
And then there's like a new appreciation for film photography now. It's almost, I don't know, it's a very intimate process, right?
Yeah, definitely.
And so, I think there's a lot of worries about AI killing photography, but I don't really see it. It's about the It's about the artist, the story they're trying to tell, the way they tell that story, the background of the story, and like the presentation. And that's it, right? I think there's more appreciation for like someone who went through hours to get this one photo, and then also that person telling you exactly what it means, as opposed to like the same thing generated by a bunch of words in 5 seconds.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. Totally agree. What have you learned about the world through photography?
Help me be more present and more observant. Before photography, I would just say, walk down a street with all the thoughts in my mind. What am I going to do later? What about this? What about that? Blah, blah, blah. But now I'm like, when you have that, like when I walk around with the camera in my hand, I'm like looking at what every individual person is doing, what they're wearing, their mannerisms, the way light is hitting different buildings, the shapes of the buildings, what if I went over here and then that crosses like this? Like, I was never that observant. And so I would say it's made me more present for sure.
What's the best and or worst piece of advice anyone's given you?
That's tough. Okay, I think of both.
Don't have to do both.
I would say best is like comparison is like the thief of joy. And that kind of goes back to what I was saying before. You shouldn't worry about what anyone else is doing.
Yeah.
It's just focus on you and your work and your journey. And that's it. And the worst advice, I don't even know. I'm like, I don't even know. I don't even know if I have an answer. I don't know. I would say like anyone that, or just following people that are just negative in general.
Yeah.
Like I don't know what it is. I go on the app, the new app Threads, the new like Instagram's Twitter. I swear I go on there and it's just like a photographer's complaints department. It's just artists shouldn't be doing this. Artists shouldn't be doing that. And I see that and I just shut it off. So I think the worst advice is like what if you ever see a tweet that starts with artists should, then that's probably the worst advice.
Yeah.
Just ignore it.
Yeah. Awesome. Who do you think I should be talking to on the podcast? There must be some other photographers out there that you'd like to recommend. And I'd like to look for people that probably don't get as much exposure as some of the bigger names.
That's tough. I would first name one of my good friends, Billy Din.
Mm-hmm.
Billy D on Instagram. Catherine Samard, landscape photographer. Do you know who Summer Wagner is?
Yeah, I do. Yeah.
Yeah, I would go for Ruben Wu. I can send you probably a very long list. Oh, my friend Brian Manier, very talented too. Yeah. That's a short list, but
no, that'll do. Thank you. You've got some stuff that you'd like to promote. Do you want to talk a little bit about that at the moment?
Sure. Okay. I recently published my first photography book. It's called Wander Around Every Corner, and it's all my favorite works from around the world up till the beginning of 2023. Because we had to cut us, which was a problem because I wanted to keep sending new images and like, okay, we got to stop right here. But
it's a cutoff point.
Yeah. It's just a mix. And there's some things from early on, like 2016, all the way up to 2023. And it shows like a variety, full spectrum of my travel work. And that's available on most Amazon, local Amazon retailers at this point. If you're in Canada, it's in Indigo bookstores. You can check your local bookstores in Europe, US, and possibly Australia by now. I'm not sure. It's been like a slow roll over a few months across the globe. And the link for it, you could find it on my Instagram or on my website.
I'll also make sure there's a link in the show notes for
this
episode when it comes out.
One more thing. Yeah, we were also, myself and a photography friend of mine, we are putting together a workshop in Switzerland later this year, so October.
Yep.
So the details for that will be coming out as soon as I can get them out. Maybe by the time this is up.
Yeah.
But again, I'll have that on the website and all over Instagram and Twitter as well. Or X, sorry.
Awesome. Yep. I've got one more question for you. And for a lot of my listeners, it's the most important issue facing photographers at the moment. Do you like pineapple on pizza?
I do. But I don't often order it, though. I don't. I feel like time and place. You can put whatever you want on pizza, but it doesn't mean it's destroying traditional toppings on pizza.
No, that's right. I've seen some very radical things on pizza, you know, tandoori chicken and yogurt and all sorts.
Yeah. Pizza has the freedom to evolve into whatever it wants to be, I feel like.
It's pizza.
Yeah. I wouldn't gatekeep pizza.
Awesome. Well, thank you very much for spending some time with us, Michael. It's been wonderful getting to know you a little bit better. Where can people find your work?
Instagram, Mind's Eye, MindZeye, and then MindsEyePhotography.com and Mind's Eye on Twitter and Threads as well.
Awesome. So. All right. Thanks very much.
Oh, you're welcome. Thanks for having me. Great chatting with you. Thanks.
Absolutely wonderful talking to you. Thank you. Thanks again for listening to Landscape Photography World. I hope you enjoyed the show and keep listening because I'll be joined by some great guests in upcoming episodes. You can find my work and this podcast at grantswinburnephotography.com. I'm also on Vero, Twitter, YouTube, Instagram, and Facebook. I think also on Blue Sky. I'm Grant Swinburne. Hope to see you out shooting soon.